they picked the highest common denominator, which now they're all doing like 80% mods and 20% manufactured. You're really getting a modular home, but it's a manufactured home only because of the steel rails and the wheels, the axles and the tongue.
Welcome to the System Build Lifestyle, a special Art of Construction series dedicated to the growing world of off-site construction. Host Devin Tilley, owner of Mountain View Window and Door and founder of the Art of Construction, alongside Audrey Kubesek of Modular SureSite and Connect Home Builders, take listeners on a deep dive through this fascinating subject. Off-site construction techniques are changing the industry. Keep following the System Build Lifestyle series so you don't get left behind.
All right, Audrey, we need to get people that have done this for quite a while, not us that are intrigued about moving forward. So I'm excited to have someone who's been in the industry doing this for a while. Am I correct with that?
I think you are correct. I think the great thing about Jay is he has a perspective of the modular side, and he also has the perspective of the manufacturer. So it'll be interesting to hear his conversation.
Yeah, I definitely want to learn more about the differences and kind of how it's been done in the past so we may be able to learn something and move forward, huh?
That's right.
Awesome.
Let's get going.
All right, here we go, Jake. What's your favorite beverage?
Water.
We get a lot of those here in Colorado.
You need a lot of oxygen in the body.
I drink a lot of iced tea.
Nice.
I like the free refills.
There you go.
Yeah. Tell us your favorite place you've traveled.
Well, I was afraid you're going to ask that. I just got back from Amsterdam.
Oh, nice.
This is my son there, so I like different places. I don't necessarily go back to the same place, so I wouldn't say, you know.
That's two people this week. I did a recording that you'll hear over on the Art of Construction with Danny Espinoza, and I loved her answer when I asked that. She said Amsterdam. She said, and not for the Colorado reason. She went to a story about that.
Yeah. So. It was amazing, actually.
Yeah, beautiful,
it's like,
huh?
New York. Yeah, it's like... it's packed.
That's cool.
So tell us one story from that trip.
Well, one thing, everyone drives a bike, like, and they do that in Colorado, but Colorado, like, you know, you treasure your bike, you lock it up. There's bikes all over the place, thousands everywhere. And I don't know how people find them because they're all black and just black. Like, nobody wants a fancy bike and they can find them.
And nobody locks them up, nothing. It's just, free market, huh?
I think they lock them up. I saw the locks, but still, like, there's so many. And then we got on, you know, the canals, of course, and we see them underneath the bridges, you know, every square inch. But what's interesting is they actually have a bike path, and if you don't watch yourself, you will get run over.
Wow.
It's like right along the sidewalk, so you have to, like, know it's color-coded.
Your distance?
Yeah, it's red pavement, so you got to, like, watch the
Did
red.
You go? Did you go on a ride?
Well, we did one out into the country.
Nice.
It was
fun.
That's
cool. But it's a serious, very few cars. But serious, like biking, I'm talking hundreds and hundreds. Like, they're all going to work. So it was pretty impressive. That was probably I bet you if you look it up, it's the most bike city for, like, people. Like, there's, you know, less cars
and more.
Yeah. So that was really impressive.
It's been so ironic. This has kind of been a fun, like, starting this next podcast as this is around my 100th recording. And when you asked us, it's experiences is really, you know, this beauty thing, the getting out of the city on the bike and seeing, it's amazing what comes back to where it's really about experiences and lifestyle and why we had to add L to that system build of why we're doing what we're doing here. So tell us your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction arena.
Okay, that one is easy. I love hockey. I play hockey
awesome.
4 days a week. So I
Wow.
Yeah. And what's your team? Who's your team?
You're like in the NHL?
Yes.
Probably the Avs. You know, I grew up in Toronto and, you know, you think I'd be a diehard Leaf fan.
Yeah.
But I came here in 92 and got a Stanley Cup in 96 and then another one in, like, I think it was like 2000 for Ray Bourque. So it was like love
Magical
at first sight.
How they
yeah,
came,
like,
right?
Yeah. Like, you wait and wait in Toronto. They haven't had one since the 50s. So I have to say... the Avs.
I get the hockey thing. Yeah. I'm a Blackhawks fan, so.
Okay. Yeah, you can. All these guys you're bringing into the studio is all these hockey guys,
know,
you know?
It's so funny.
They played good last night.
They did. See that one guy get his mouth, like, taken out?
Yeah.
And, like, they're always, like, missing teeth, all these guys.
They played fantastic last night.
They did.
So, yeah, hockey is definitely my passion.
Yeah, I
and it releases lots of energy.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
There's a lot of good energy release in hockey.
It's a definite. Yeah. So
I love
big
it.
Sport.
Cool.
So work and hockey is sort of like my life. It's just you know, a little play, but mostly, you know, that's me.
Yeah.
Cool.
I have a routine. It's pretty rigid. I hate to sound boring, but I like work a lot. I enjoy what I do.
That's good.
There you go. Yeah. You found
it's
your
not
passion.
So much like work.
There you go.
Right?
We got to know a little bit about Jay Skolnick. Tell us your story and why we are talking about System Build Lifestyle with Jay today.
Okay. I'll try to give you a quick synopsis. I built my first house in 1982. I was stick building, and it was in Phoenix. That was like a pinnacle of my life. Like, I really enjoyed it. You know, I just loved walking the homes in the frame stage. And
building
then,
on site, right?
Yeah, it was all mm-hmm. on site. And I really liked the smell of, you know, them cutting the you know, the studs. And it was a lot of fun. And then, you know, zoom forward to 92, moved to Denver. And I didn't build for a little while. And then house prices were rising in 92, as you remember. They were recovering. And I went, God, there's got to be a way to cut back, roll back the price and, you know, get back to where we started, like 92, 93, like when we had one of the, I think we had like about the, you know, maybe the 15th most affordable market in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we went from affordable to a lot less affordable. So then I thought, well, these modulars are a neat idea. Like this is a way to roll back the price instantly because nobody was really, not too many people were doing it. So all of a sudden you could come up with a instant, you know, price reduction because you're buying the house in a factory. It's made in a factory. So you're controlling all your costs and it's a little bit faster, not a ton faster because you got different trades, but you're locking in your prices and you don't have to deal with the constant price increases that I hear today, you know, like at each phase. So that's what I did in 98. I did my first house, August of 98. And I, then I was just talking about the subdivision I did in Commerce City. And Commerce City was a perfect spot. I built 52 houses on my first subdivision. It's called Mountain.
So you're really like the pioneer of doing community development, as I would see it, Jay.
Yeah. I was one of the few that sort of put the land-home package together. Like everyone thinks that, well, there was like an 80-20 flip in the industry. Like early, like pre-90s, 80% of the homes went to parks. And very few homes were on land and, you know, put together on land as a land home package. But then the industry evolved and the quality increased and they actually came out with a modular home, which for your listeners, modular is more of like a marketing name, but it's really built to the IRC code. You know, with your windows, you got to, you know, you put them in a home built to the IRC code.
An IRC code is basically the building code for on-site construction. It is off-site.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So the International Residential Building Code is adopted by everybody now. It used to be UBC, west of the Mississippi, and then they used to have the BOCA was another code. So, and CABO, I think. Anyway, so they
had
all these codes.
There's really, that's a lot of quotes.
Yeah, it was too many codes. Architects couldn't transport their plans, you know, like from state to state.
They were making it so difficult.
Yeah, they've made it
really
difficult.
Good thing they started streamlining.
Right. So the whole U.S. basically adopted IRC to make it simplified. And then the factories, you know, of course, followed with that. And now you can get an IRC home and you can go to every jurisdiction pretty much and say, hey, I'm building an IRC home. Give me my permit.
So at that time, did we have factories here in Colorado at that time?
We did. In Berthoud, Colorado.
Okay.
Not the Berthoud Pass, but Berthoud, Colorado, right just south of Loveland. They have a factory, and it was a Champion factory.
Okay.
Used to be called Titan Homes, but it became Champion. And that was one of the most active factories in the in Colorado. There was also All American Homes in Milliken.
Okay.
They closed.
What do you think? How many homes do you think they were doing at that time?
Berthoud, I think, was doing about, they always talking boxes, about 500, 450, 450 boxes. So let's say they're all, you know, two boxes.
And when you say boxes, that's what fits on a truck, like kind of per truck?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like each half of a house is, most homes are two boxes. Single wides, as they call them, go mostly into parks. So they'll get, you know, so that sort of 80-20 deal, like a lot of them were singles, and then they started getting into the doubles because they became a home and they started building more IRCs. So that gets back, you know, it went from like 80% manufactured homes, which is a federal building code regulated by the HUD Department, Housing Urban Development Division of the government. Mm-hmm. So HUD regulated manufactured housing and the local government regulated the IRC.
Okay.
So, and the IRC became known as modular manufactured homes. Our HUDs became manufactured homes.
Okay. And so, manufacturer, where would you find a manufactured home? Is it like one of the mobile parks? You would find a home like that there?
Mostly, right? Yeah. What's interesting is most people don't realize that I'm building right now a little more than half of my homes are actually manufactured, but they're on land.
Okay.
It's very difficult to do that because you have to have a 10-year warranty, and I sort of have the monopoly for a 10-year warranty in the state of Colorado. Like, there's not too many people that have that. And the reason why you need that is you can't get financing unless you put a 10-year warranty on the house if it's manufactured. But I could save, you know, like I could save like, you know, maybe 15 grand by doing a manufactured home, not because of the home, but I don't have to do a crane. I don't have to have a concrete foundation. There's lots of savings along the way. The homes are basically...
So the manufactured, they stay on the wheels and you're putting a skirt around.
Yeah. We take off the wheels, we take off the tongue, and we...
The old wheel and tongue, huh?
Yeah, the old wheel and tongue, yeah. The ball and chain, the wheel and tongue. Yeah, so... exactly. So, yeah, we take off the wheel and the tongue or the... And the axles. And
there it is.
So we take that off and we actually secure it to the site and it becomes a permanent foundation. And there's a guide, the 1996 permanent foundation guide. And we get our engineer to certify it that it's permanent. And then we get the financing.
But you're not putting a foundation. You're basically putting it on blocks a certain way. You're not.
Well, yeah.
Are you pouring a pad that it's going
on?
We actually
have a ribbon foundation. And it's... that picture on the top right, there.
So he's showing me his brochure out there, basically pouring a pad around where the structure sits on.
Yeah, we pour. The nice thing about our foundations, and this is only on the manufactured homes, is we pour a, what they call them ribbons. We drive the home on top of it so we don't have to have the crane. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the one ribbon, like you mentioned, all around the outside, and that
supports
our wall. We
what
actually
is the typical size of one of those homes?
Oh, I'd say 80% of the production is probably 60 by 30.
So we're at 1,800 square feet. That's a pretty large home.
Yeah, I would say the average is 56 is like the sweet spot just because that's sort of this common plan you see.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that evolved while I was in the industry, it used to be dealers call them the 28 wides. They're not really 28 wide. That's a real misnomer, and I'm so glad I could tell as many people as possible this because salespeople say, hey, yeah, you'll get the 28 wide. Well, they get home, and it's not a 28 wide. It's 26 foot 8 inches.
And the reason for that is because?
The soffit overhang. It's an old mobile home park thing. Like, we got to have 28 feet to fit in the hole there in the mobile home park. So all the salesmen that are in the industry think 28 feet, 28 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're buying a house, right, you want to know what the walls are. It's 26.
This is magical for me to hear this. And I have to tell a story about this that I just finished reading the book Traction. And I actually just talked about it on The Art of Construction, where I love reviewing books that really are monumental in change. And we're actually implementing the EOS model into our businesses. And the story in the book just resonated with me, with you just said, as if the old 28 wide, that was the same. And so the story goes like this, and you can hear it over on The Art of Construction. I apologize, Tribe, if you're listening to both, but sometimes stories are worth saying twice. So at Thanksgiving dinner, which timing is right, where we're at this time of year, she has getting ready to put the ham or turkey in the oven, and she just or the ham, and cuts the back quarter off the ham. He said, why are you doing that? And she's like, that's how my mom taught me. And so put it in the oven. He goes, you know, that's interesting. Her mom's here. I'm going to go ask her that. Well, why does she cut the back quarter of the ham off? So goes, why do you do that? And she goes, that's how my mom taught me. Well, great-grandma happened to be there at this. So he goes and asks great-grandma, and great-grandma says, silly, back in the day, our ovens were only so small. So it means we only could have pans that were so small. So that to fit the ham in the pan, we had to cut the quarter off. And
that's funny.
Taught that.
And that
three generations, that was still the norm. So I tell that story here at System Build Lifestyle. We love to hear, right. you know,
takes
premier community homes as the telling us we want to know where we came from to help us paint the picture, know where we're going.
Yeah.
We don't have to go 28 wide. We don't have to cut the back quarter of the ham off because we have things called technology to help move it forward, right?
Right.
So I just want to intervene that's and say, great. Keep telling that story because that's what this is all about, right?
Right, it's progression, right?
It's amazing how long it takes to kill an old habit. I'll tell you a funny story. You know, I'm still a member of the association, and there's a, you know...
The Rocky Mountain Housing Association,
right. So
okay.
You've talked to them.
Yep.
And there was someone there about 10 years ago, uh-huh. and, you know, we were all really close, and she said... Just between you and I, the best thing that could happen to this industry is the whole generation die off. Because it's so hard to change. Every salesman goes from one factory
just
to another.
Just kill them off. It's fine. Well, move forward.
And what he said is so real. And that's where if you go over to the Art of Construction, we have kind of coined and it's become this kind of global phenomenon where we have all these people talking about trusted advisors is the big coin thing. And that kudos to Greg Hernandez, who came spending his whole career in the financial sector and came in and is like, these your sales consultants, the sales rep, the whole business model of pitch and sell. He's like, to really do this, you're a trusted advisor like you are an advisement in financials, to where it's not like we're used to just calling up to get the
absolutely.
Stock quote.
There's so much more.
There's
that
so many
around.
Tools out there.
Yes.
You know, it's a totally
right.
different world. And so we've kind of coined on the Art of Construction, our sister podcast, you know, kind of crusty contractor, crusty supplier. And I'll just call a spade. It's to say either you're growing or dying and either get on the revolution or get out of the way. And it's a professional way to say you got to look yourself in the mirror and say it's not how it used to be. And that's where hopefully we can help be that leading that revolution to say we're not here to just change to change. We're here to change for the good of us all. And that's where I want to continue going
sure.
down that path of to say where you came from to where what are you doing differently on today than when you did this home in 1998 when you did your first offsite house?
You know, I sort of have a like it's a formula and
yeah, you have a process.
Yeah. I tweaked it a lot in the first couple of years and I sort of have my formula now and we don't change a lot. Sometimes we change factories, sometimes not a lot. It's we got a really good formula. So with the factories, you know, now we're mostly buying modulars and we still do the HUD code. It just depends on the price range and the neighborhood. You have to be cognizant of your appraisals. So if you go into, I'll give you another interesting, you know, sort of fact. When there was the financial debacle in 2008, Washington, in their infinite wisdom, thought like, well, are these manufactured homes were a cause of, they brought down our industry, you know, like they were trying to like look for a scapegoat. So they said, we're going to have two appraisal forms. We're going to have one for those nasty modular or manufactured homes. And then we're going to have another one for the modulars because they're just built better. Well, the truth of the fact is above the floor, and people just don't know the definitions and how they're built, but for all your listeners, above the floor, the home is pretty much the same. So this whole appraisal thing is great if you want to like play into their game, because if you build a modular, they have to get stick-built IRC homes. So you're just going to like get all these high appraisals because you picked a modular because you're on the form for the modulars. It's a Fannie Mae form. But if you pick a manufactured home, then you know, you want to be careful and be in an area where there's lots of manufacturers and manufactured homes, and you'll probably be fine because, you know,
it has to appraise towards that same value.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but what's really interesting is most factories don't want to have millions of parts. You know, if a plumbing pipe in a manufactured home, if you compare the codes, you know, there might be a quarter inch difference on the actual plumbing pipe. There might be very, very subtle differences on a whole bunch of different components, but there's no way that they're going to grab a pipe off the shelf and put the wrong pipe in a house and have that liability. So everything above the floor is essentially the same in all the homes in that factory. So they pick the highest common denominator, which now they're all doing like 80% mods and 20% manufactured. You're really getting a modular home, but it's a manufactured home only because of the steel rails and the wheels, the axles and the tongue that we talked about.
Yeah.
So it's really a misnomer, but the floor system is basically what, you know, that's why people always say, hey, I looked underneath, I saw the rails. Oh God, it's a HUD, run. You know, so it's like this thing that like, it's not that much different. It's just, you know.
It's just a belief system and people just don't understand.
Yeah.
Which is great that you can explain it like that so that there's more education.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, what is the difference? I keep hearing there's a big difference. Well, it's really the foundation system. And to be honest, I always tell people, if you brought a person from India or somewhere out of the country and you said, which system do you like better? They probably would say the manufactured, because you're getting a 2x6 or a 2x8 floor joist. They can go as low as 2x6, but a lot of them, again, don't want to have all these different parts. So they just pick a 2x8 so they have it in the factory. And then you have a 12.5-inch I-beam underneath. Well, that's a pretty thick floor. And you got steel. You got four bars of steel underneath that home. It's two boxes. And it's only 30 feet wide. So it's about every 6 feet you got steel beam. Well, those beams are, you know, like probably worth about, you know, $1,200-$1,500 each. So that's a lot of material. It's strong, but it's a manufactured home. So, you know, we don't want to buy it. Whereas the IRC has a 2x10 floor joist. So you're having a 10 versus a 21 actually foot system, or inch, you know, 21 inch system. So actually, this is a funny story. I went to another factory and I switched, and they all carry like mods and manufactured, and they have a price list for each. And this factory I switched to said, I looked, I said, God, your prices are almost identical. And I said to the guy, you know, all those years I was at this other factory, they would charge more for the modular. And I could never understand why, because it was only a 2x10 floor joist. The other home had a 2x8. But I was getting all this steel. So there was like 2-inch difference, but I was getting all the steel. And he said, you know what? It was just a money grab. We knew the modular was on land. It was going to be probably worth more. So we charged $5,500 more. And I was like, you know, I knew that modular didn't even have as much as the manufactured. So that gets back to, they're really built very similar. The quality is very similar. But you have to understand that every factory will build to their region. So when you have a factory that's in Florida or Texas, and maybe 60% of their business, or actually the factory that I left was in Texas, and they were probably doing 85% mobile home parks. Their home was a lot less quality, and they didn't even have a modular, actually. So I couldn't even finish that part of the story, like the comparison. But there was only manufactured. So what I'm saying is, like, every factory builds to their region and their quality to the region. So everything starts off as sort of like manufactured, maybe vinyl walls. And then as the factories realize where their market is, then they go into like tape and texture.
Different finishes in the interior.
Exactly.
The exterior,
maybe nicer windows, maybe a 9-foot ceiling, 9-foot sidewall versus an 8-foot, because their market will, you know, demand it.
Right.
So they all have like where they can start and then where they can end up. And it's all regional. So that's another thing, is you can't generalize like, oh, I've seen them. Like, you worked at Palm Harbor and it was like a little cheap. Well, not, you know, they've come a long way, but also maybe Palm Harbor was it in Florida, or I don't know, where was the plant that you worked at?
Oh, it was just a dealer.
Oh, okay.
That represented them. The manufacturer, I think, was in Arizona or something.
Oh, okay, yeah, gotcha.
The plant. But yeah, you don't look back; you look forward, right?
Yeah.
You know, as if you've heard this, I think I've told the story in one of the other podcasts, is how my perception was, is it was just that particular thing was all about cheap.
Yeah.
But I you know, that's where I want to move forward now and say, what are some, you know, do you position the houses a little bit different? A lot of the stuff that we've been seeing are a lot of these kind of California trends, or kind of taking the boxes, if you will, to not make it look like a modular box,
right,
when it's all said and done. And I think that's something that, how do we all work together to make that change? What's your take
well,
on that?
Audrey and I have a common friend, Adam Berger, and he
he's a pioneer as well.
Yeah,
would say that,
I mean,
you know, he's doing something completely different.
Yeah, he's so determined to create the same quality as a stick build, and he's getting lots of ideas through Stapleton. I mean, he just showed me yesterday. He's got the exact same floor plan as a Stapleton townhome that he visited, and he's getting all these high-end finishes. So I tend to, like, you know, there's an old saying, build for the masses and eat with the classes. I end up trying to – I really like the low end, like, where people cry at the closing. I really had, like, honestly, I've had
– You like the people connection. You're doing something that brings affordable living back into the scope of the industry again.
You'd be amazed. Like, people cry at the closings.
Oh, sure.
You know,
if someone that you didn't think you could get a home, and you get a home, there's a lot of value there.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I started in 1998, I was selling homes for $98,500. Now, I was probably, you know, $15,000 low because I was a little wet behind the ear and my budgets were off. But still, I was in the, you know, really, really low hundreds. And those people were just elated.
That's cool.
So you're changing people's lives, and I like that. I don't want to really, you know, I think there's also a ceiling. Like, I'm in the business, and I think, you know, you gotta, like, decide where's your niche. If you want to compete right against stick built, it's going to be a little hard, because the stick built, when you're driving down a highway with a modular home, it's, you know, the DOT is 16 feet wide max. That's why we have this, like, 30 wide, 20, is it 29, is it 30? Each factory has a different jig. And then, you know, I told you about the 28 wide. Well, that was with the soffit. That was actually.
And you're talking about the width of the house.
Yeah, because they
on the truck, right? How? Because you can only be delivered so wide on the road driving it to the site.
Now, you could go wider and have, like, all these escort cars, but it's just cost prohibitive usually. So everyone likes to know, what can I drive down the highway legally? And it's 16 feet wide and 76 foot long with a 4 foot hitch, you know, the 4 foot hitch. So that's 80 feet. And that's 80 feet is, I'm not really in the trucking business, but I know 80 feet is the length that they can maximum.
I don't know. I think maybe you are after the 30 years that you've been doing this. Yeah. So I'm going to say yes.
Yes. So it's, you got 80 as a restriction and you got 16. And that's why, I was alluding to before, like, this 28 wide, it's really only 26 foot eight. But then all these factories figured out somehow, like, we could bump it to, like, I've had homes that are 30 foot 4 inches wide instead of 26. And that's like I'm talking outside of house to outside of house, not the soffits. Forget the soffits. So what they do is they shrink the soffit a little bit, but they give a much better product inside. Like, they, you know, you get 2 feet on each box, basically.
But
so
going,
your depths
going,
are nicer.
And going back to your, you know, your dialogue, Devin, about how they're changing this and what's the view of these homes and what's the dynamic and what's the customization that's happening. I mean, if you go to Colorado Factory Modulars or Factory Modulars, you'll be able to see some of the designs and stuff that Jay has put together. There's a lot of front porch access now. It really changes the dynamic of the actual build itself. So there's a lot of things that you're doing. Same thing getting back to Adam and doing what he's doing. Yeah. He's really changing the idea of doing infill lots in a city area of Denver, which is super difficult, as we both know.
Right.
And now he's actually coming up with this formula of having this really beautiful duplex or these townhomes that he's designing that any person walking on the street isn't going to go, oh, that's a modular. It doesn't even
exist.
It'd
be hard to tell.
It'd be very hard to tell.
I mean, I guess I have forgotten some of the, like, things. Like, here, I did a lot of brick on the front.
Yeah, you've done a lot of...
you could do brick. 9-foot ceilings are a really cool thing that the factory offered. Mm-hmm. That, and it's like, to get a house with 9-foot ceilings. Well, first of all, you don't even realize, like, the stick build homes that you buy that are, you know, what we call track homes, those are usually, you know, like 8-foot ceilings, and they're not 2x6, they're 2x4 construction. Well,
yes.
Most of my homes are 2x6. They're,
the client gets to pick everything out. It's not like walking into a regular track home where you have maybe 3 different paint choices, right?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of different selection that actually makes a client feel like it is a custom home.
Right.
At a certain price point, which is great for affordability and being able to have an option to look at another product.
And how do you do that selection? Is there a certain manufacturer? You said you're someone out of Texas, now it's someone else.
Yeah, every factory will give you color boards with, like, colors you could pick, upgrades. I have one house, for example, I said, hey, don't put the countertops in, and I'm going to do granite. So, you know, you get this like affordable house and then all of a sudden you got granite. Like, so some things you could do yourself, but what's really interesting is I have a friend who's doing a subdivision and he had to build like, you know, a little over 20 homes at one time because the trades, we have a real shortage of trades.
Right.
And it's been going on for years, but you know, we just saw the article in the Denver Business Journal about the big shortage.
Sure.
So he had to build 20 at a time and he had to put everything in. You can't really pick anything because he has to build them before he's even selling them.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, you can't even probably have choices. So what's really cool is I could order a home basically, you know, we used to order them by fax. You know, now we just scan. Literally, I used to order them, send them to Berthet, and, you know, I would get it like they'd be built in 10 days and I just like watch the fax go through. And so
it's crazy. So at that time, yeah. How fast was it like on the site? So you had it built in 10 days. Like how fast did you have it at that point? Because they were located in Colorado. Like two weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, we would literally get the house. It would be built in 7 to 10 days.
Yes.
And then it'd be on the site like within 2 weeks. Like,
isn't that crazy? Yeah. Wouldn't that be amazing? But we're so fulfilled now. All of these factories are just overwhelmed and... You know, a lot of the builders that I speak to now, I mean, they're anywhere from 12 weeks to 16 to 20 weeks on back order because there are so many getting built at this time.
Well, one of the bottlenecks is that, you know, they all have to be, like we're doing this, I told you about the 80-20, how now it's all it's about 80% modular. Well, all those modulars have to be approved by the state of Colorado. That is the building department.
Yeah.
So imagine like... maybe four factories feed into Colorado because there's a distance. Eventually, you don't use the other factories.
Right.
Well, imagine all those factories are just sending them down to one person, you know, at 1313 Sherman. And I can't imagine, like, they must have 100 plans down there.
Easily, because each builder that I've met, and I've met most of them.
Yeah.
I mean, several years ago, 3 years ago, they were maybe building anywhere from 10 to 15, and now they're building anywhere from 30 to 70 homes.
Right.
That's a great increase of business.
Sure.
You know, and expansion.
You're adding up all the different dealers. I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, getting back to my friend with the, you know, building 20 houses, I can actually have someone totally customize the house that they want with countertops and moldings and appliances and exterior colors, you know, at least two, three different colors outside. And then we just order the home.
And everything comes in the home. Appliances and all gets shipped in the home.
Yeah, it's carpet so cool. Carpet colors.
Yeah. Flooring.
Yeah, it's amazing. We could put a bathroom in, like an extra bathroom in for like $1,600. Like, it's ridiculous. So, but they can do all that customizing, which, can you imagine, like, someone who's buying a home for under $300,000 feeling like it's a custom home?
Yeah.
So,
and technically it is, if you really think about it.
That's quite a list of stuff they get to pick.
And the great thing is, so you get this home for $300,000, right? You pick all your things. In another year, if you're like, you know, I just want to change something, you can invest, you know, $20,000-$30,000 more in different upgrades. I mean, it's just interesting.
Yeah, we can make it as complicated or uncomplicated as we want. Like,
so as the pioneer person in the industry, where do you see this offsite construction industry going?
Well, I think the quality is just always going to get better. I've seen from 98 to now, like, big strides in quality, especially with everything going modular and meeting all the IRC codes. So,
like cabinets, flooring, all the particular interior finish, even exterior finish is so much greater. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
In quality?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just keep upping the bar and getting it more the on-site look, if you will.
Right.
Right.
If you want that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get more custom. I mean, there's some factories that sort of like build them one at a time. And there's, you know, the guy up in Scotts Bluff. They, you know, it's just all total custom. Like, he'll go out and buy Marvin windows or Pella's or whatever you want. And then, you know,
you go. Maybe I need to start talking to him, Devin.
You bet. Well, let's get him a listen and we'll go from there,
that's
right?
That's right, exactly.
So,
well, you know, you did a great job of really building the foundation of where we came from when it comes to modular. And we'll keep you in touch and hopefully we can have you back and continue to have this conversation as we build up the system build lifestyle.
Absolutely.
So, sure.
As a learning organization, if there's one thing you want the system build audience to hear to help them grow their business, what is that one thing you want to leave them with?
For anyone that's in the business,
yeah.
in the manufactured home or modular business?
Yeah.
I'd say treat the consumer, the buyer, as, you know, like that it's a custom home, and that treat them as if they're your brother or your sister, because there's a lot of consumers that, you know, in this business that just, it's, you know, the common denominator is a little low.
Gotcha.
That's a good key to any type of business, right? Always take care of your client.
Treat people the way you want to be treated.
I have some great testimonials on my website, and I'm proud of everyone.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure to have all that stuff in the show notes, and thanks for coming and telling us your story, Jay.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Devin. Awesome. And Audrey.
So, Audrey, wouldn't you say that's a lot of great information and a wealth of knowledge that sometimes I like to say the best ideas are stolen? We can go to a guy that's lived it, done communities, and help us drive this SBL revolution forward, huh?
I think Jay's done that, and I think there's so much more that this industry can allow, and he is just a great advocate for it. So thank you, Jay.
Hey, Tribe. I'm so passionate about this tribe that we're building, and just want to say thanks for listening. And as the Go-Giver, maybe you can give me something back. If you liked what you heard today, do us a favor and head over to iTunes and give us a review. It's really how the podcasting world grows their business. And that's what we're all about here. This helps to get the podcast in front of people looking to grow their business. We want to hear what you want more of. This is for you, contractors and architects, to grow your business. Talk to you on the next one, Tribe.